Hi there, listeners. Welcome to episode 226 of Never on the Back Foot podcast. Joining me today is Roberta Moretti Averi. She is a Brazilian cricketer and the captain of the national women's cricket team. Without further ado, let's hop on to understand more about her journey. Hi, Roberta. Welcome to Never on the Back Foot podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to host you. First things first, how are you doing today?
Hello. I'm so happy to be here with you, finally be able to talk to you. I'm very good today. Good day here in Brazil.
Right. And, this was a conversation that I was really looking forward to because, having seen you in the fair break and, wanting to know more about your journey, I decided, hey, let me just, invite you on the podcast and have a chat, which will also give our listeners a chance to, get to know you better. So to just kickstart our discussion, I'd just like to ask, how was your childhood like? And could you talk about some of the early influences on you that kind of shaped you to be the person you are, to aspire to become a cricketer?
Yes, of course. Actually, this is such a good question. And I think there's such a big influence of our childhood and the people we are right now. So I grew in a family, mom and dad always played sports. They used to play golf. They were very active. But my mom especially was a very avid competitor. She was the only woman that used to play golf in into like scratch categories. And she was like always, people would look at her and always say, oh, she can't play, she can't compete. And she would do everything to play. She would get her golf clubs, get two buses underground, play competitions, come back with a trophy. So for me, she has always been this role model of women can do it all, women can compete, women can play well, regardless of what others are saying. So I grew seeing that in my household every single day. And I think that was my first reference of a woman athlete. Although she doesn't consider herself an athlete at all, she just calls herself a social golfer. But I think that made me a lot of the person that I am right now. I didn't get to know cricket until very late in life. But I started competing golf when I was 10, handball when I was 12. And I always carried this huge passion. For me, it's always, everything I do is 150%. I go all hard, all in, all the time. But I do believe that that comes from the presence of my mom and how she perceived the sports in her life.
Right. And what was actually even one of your earliest memories of cricket, like, watching it on TV? And what got you interested in the game, like something very specific or, particular? And you can also talk about yourself as a cricket fan. Yeah.
This is actually a terrible answer. But the first time I watched cricket, I was living in England because I lived in England from the age of 18 to 25. And I was living there and I turned on the TV and the 2005 Ashes, which I think it was the 2005 Ashes series, which was one of the best series ever. And I turned on the TV, I saw all of those men in white and I turned off the TV saying, what a boring game. Why do English people like this that much? So my first connection with cricket was terrible. I didn't understand the game. I didn't really care about it. But when I moved back to Brazil, because my husband is English, Richard, he got called to be one of the coaches in Cricket Brazil, which was a very, very small project in the early beginnings, very, very grassroots and development only. And I ended up going into one of these softball fun evenings, and I loved it. So my first cool memory of cricket was only when I was 28, already living in Brazil and playing at the evenings with a lot of kids and softball cricket, six aside, no pads, no gloves, no anything, just having fun because it looked a lot like a street game in Brazil that is called Bet, which is from, it came from cricket in the 1700s. So actually cricket was just something cool in my life when I was much older, and we didn't have anything being broadcasted in Brazil. We didn't have anyone that played cricket before us in Brazil. So for me, it was everything super new. And I ended up growing with Cricket Brazil. Although they had women's teams before me, the development happened in my hometown. So I ended up seeing the whole of the development of cricket in Brazil, and it's pretty cool where we're going so far.
Right, and you are undoubtedly, you know, a trailblazer. And before I get into how you actually made cricket your profession, who was your favorite cricketer growing up? Like, you know, I understand that your influence came much later, like in 2005 when you watched the men's Ashes. But any favorite cricketer or someone you really look up to?
Well, until when I was 28, I didn't even know or understand cricket. So I didn't have anyone growing up. But when I started watching cricket, let's say I started playing cricket in 2013. The first time I actually started thinking about cricket outside Brazil was 2017, when I was invited. In 2016, I was MVP in the South American Championship. Because of that, they called me to be part of a camp in USA. And the captain of the team that I was going to play for in this camp was Claire Taylor, former English captain. So she was the first person that I saw, like, wow, this woman is good. She knows what she's doing. She has World Cup titles. She's good. And because of that camp, I got called for a second one, which was done by Charlotte Edwards and Susie Bates. So in 1 year, I met these three women that were what changed my life, because Charlotte Edwards had just retired. Susie Bates is still playing absolutely amazing. And Claire Taylor, which was this, oh my God, I still don't have any words for her. So they made my view of what women's cricket, how good women's cricket could be. Because until that moment, all we had here was a very, very basic setup. And we were very bad in cricket. So they were the first ones to show me there was a huge level. And then 2017 was also the famous final of the ODI World Cup that unfortunately India lost for England, but that was the first World Cup that was broadcasted in Brazil. So I watched that final. So, you know, 2017 was the year that everything started to change. And these three women were the women that became the massive references for me.
That is actually quite fascinating to hear. And the 2017 World Cup loss still, you know, rings in my heart. But if we had to, you know, look at your journey as a cricketer, where did you decide, you know, that, hey, I want to make this my, you know, profession and actually see it go somewhere? And how do you get involved?
Yeah, when I started playing and I played my first women's national tournament, I saw most of the Brazilian girls that were playing, the girls that were playing for the Brazilian team. And as soon as I saw them, I said, you know what? I can be as good as they are. So in the first year that I played, I was like, I want to be in the national team. Doesn't matter what happens, I'm going to be. So I started like training more than anyone else. I wanted to be a bowler, so I was bowling more. I wanted to be a very good fielder. And the following year I was called for the national team. So I was like, okay, this is super good. But by the time, we never had won any South American championship. Every time we played, we lost for Argentina. So I was like, okay, now I want to be part of a team, of a tournament that we are going to beat Argentina. And in 2015, we beat Argentina for the first time and we were champions. I was like, okay, now I want to be an MVP. And the following year, I was an MVP. So things started happening like little by little. I never thought when I started playing, like, okay, I'm going to be a professional player or anything like that. But I think the horizons started opening as we grew up in Brazil, because we didn't have a good setup in Brazil at the time. But things clicked in 2019 when we won the South American Championships 4 times in 5 years. So we were actually getting very successful here. And I spoke to my boss. I said, what is next? If we win the South American Championship again, what we're going to do? We're going to go back to the training center and start all over again for the South American Championship again? Is there anything bigger than we can achieve? And he answered saying, no, I think we are going to start being part of the World Cup qualifiers like we used to before. And for that, we would like to offer you girls contracts so you can actually train full time. Have coaches and start getting more prepared. Up to 2019, we would pay for all expenses, all the kit, all food. We were completely funded by ourselves, 100% amateur. And we moved in 2 months, we moved from 100% amateur to 100% professional, getting a salary, getting uniform, training times, physical training, strength and conditioning, mental coaching, physiotherapy. It was from 0 to 100 in 2 months. So things happened, but I think we actually opened the roads for this to happen. And we were amazing to have a confederation like Cricket Brazil that were really, really willing to invest in us and support us. So I think we were pretty lucky in how things happened, and very lucky that all of this happened in Brazil.
That's actually, again, quite remarkable to hear, because coming from India, you see how there are already structures in place for so many years. So you don't get to hear, these stories of like grassroots and then eventually, it developing into a whole structure. But even though, all of these good things came after certain victories that your team secured, what were some of the challenges that, you faced as a cricketer in Brazil? Because it is an associate nation, right? And how did the team rally around? How did Cricket Brazil, try to, help you overcome them?
Oh, we faced everything that you can happen. You can think of, we've done. We didn't have nets, for example. So the first 2 years that we trained in an open space with no net, closed area, like an indoor center, no nets. We didn't have balls. We had one kit for the whole team. We're talking about 11 girls. We had to share. We didn't have coaches. The president of Cricket Brazil would kind of coach us. My husband was a coach, would kind of help us. And then 2 years after we actually started, we decided to do a portable net, but we had to put it together and get it out every training session. It would take us 90 minutes to put it together and 90 minutes to get it down every day. It was so heavy. It was terrible. We would net for 10 minutes each and get and finish the training would finish. We didn't have money, so we had to fundraise for everything. And considering that our project here in Brazil is from a community project, so the girls that were coming to the team, they were coming from a very underprivileged community, so they didn't have money. They didn't have $300 to pay for a ticket and another $100 to pay for food expenses and everything else. So we would do fundraise. So we would do garage sales, sell pizzas, sell chocolates, raffle tickets. We would do anything to be able to fund the team to travel. And that was actually very successful because we were always able to fund everyone. So that created this big cricket community. There was a lot of struggles. We didn't have games, for example, because we don't watch cricket. We didn't really know how to play cricket. So sometimes things would happen in a game and they would look at us and say, "You can do that." We're like, "Oh, really? I'm sorry. I don't know." So we're sometimes playing international match and not knowing that if the ball touches you, you didn't attempt a shot. You can't run. A leg bye is only if you attempt a shot. But we didn't know that. We had no idea. It was so new to us. It's actually a very fun story about an under 13 boy. He traveled for his first tournament. And he bowled first ball of the tournament, and he got a guy OBW. The whole team shouted, and the boy was out. And he was like, "Why is he out?" And then the umpire said, "OBW." He looked at the team, said, "Why is he out?" And he couldn't get that he was out because OBW. He never seen an OBW before. He was playing for 2 months. And then in the same over, he bowled, hit the stumps, same over, and he looked at the umpire and said, "That's how you get someone out." Like he had no idea. But anyway, so there were a lot of challenges because the cricket culture does not exist. The cricket infrastructure did not exist. And the cricket understanding was being taught by the coaches in a very early stage. Now we do have a structure. Now we have the understanding. Now we have 5,000 kids playing every week here. We have seven hubs playing cricket across our region. So now people look at us and say, "Oh, cricket. Oh, yeah, my cousin plays. I saw on TV. I watched you guys in America." Now it makes sense. But 10 years ago, things were very different.
Right. And, you know, seeing your journey through all these years has been quite inspiring. That kind of prompts me to ask you, you know, how is it to represent Brazil in international cricket, right? And do you have any goals or aspirations for the future? Like, you know, do well in the qualifiers and then eventually see your team in the World Cup, perhaps?
Yes, absolutely. We would love to go to the global qualifiers in the next 4 years. Is not an easy challenge because we are improving, but so is USA, so is Canada, so is Argentina. So everyone is improving at the same rate. But we do want that to be our goal. And I think World Cup, maybe we look in Thailand. Thailand took 8 to 10 years from scratch to become a very powerful country. I think 10 years would be 10, 12 years would be what we're thinking about for a World Cup. But that does not mean that we can't have an under-19 team going to a World Cup in a shorter time frame. So I think we want to make sure that our structure for girls and women is very strong so we can compete with the bigger countries. And not only that, we also want the boys and the men to have the same opportunity. I do believe the boys are going to start having a development program shortly. The men are going to have a little bit more support as well very soon. So we want to grow as a whole country. But the women, I think 10, 12 years for a World Cup, 4 to 5 years for the next, for global qualifiers. And I think that's going to be a good time frame. And maybe 5 to 6 years for the under-19 squad to be playing the World Cup as well.
Absolutely. And on that line of thought, how would you assess the state of women's cricket in Brazil? Like, do you see it evolving in the coming years? Because you just spoke about how, you know, we have a lot of academies that's coming up. You have so many children who are also playing the game. So how would you look at it?
In Brazil, it's a completely different scenario than most of the other countries because we have 50% boys, 50% girls playing. So because we started from scratch, we were able to do cricket for everyone, which I know is different than the majority of the other countries. And in high performance, we even have a little bit more girls playing than boys. So we want to make sure that whoever is playing cricket can play on the level they are currently at. So for example, if you are high performance, we want to have a high performance setup, international cricket, under-19s, under-21s, seniors. If you are playing the National League, we want to give you a structured National League with teams, a calendar. The same thing in the local leagues that we have in other federations that are over there. The same thing in school festivals, community leagues, softball leagues. We want to make sure that whoever is here in Brazil getting in contact with cricket, that they stay in the system. And for that, we needed more coaches, for example. And because we have a lot of people to teach, we just didn't have people enough to that understood cricket to teach. So we started a university program, where cricket pays for some leaders of the community their university fees. And they are graduated into PE. They become sports coaches and they start giving lessons for Cricket Brazil. So while they are in university, they give 10 hours of cricket lessons per week. And after they finish university, they have the ability of being contracted for Cricket Brazil and become coaches. So currently we have 5 coaches that are contracted from this project that have already graduated. And we have another 17 that are with university being paid by Cricket Brazil. And we are starting to make our own coaches. And it's pretty cool because you go to the university, everybody knows about cricket. You go into the neighborhoods, everybody knows about cricket. So it's creating this culture of cricket in town and in the hubs that we are playing. So I think that's a way that we are going to end up carry on growing and making sure that everyone sticks with cricket in their lives. They can play whichever level they want to.
That is, again, quite interesting to hear. And now, you know, you have been in the cricketing ecosystem for such a long time. So if there is a young listener, you know, who's tuned into this episode, would you like to explain the pathway to become a cricketer? Like what you explained is how, you know, one can join this coaching system and then, you know, help the game grow. But if someone wants to like just play, like a young girl who aspires to be a cricketer, what would the pathway look like?
So there are 2 ways that you can get in contact with cricket here with us. You can either be in a school that offers cricket. We have more than 70 schools that offer cricket at this moment. Or you can hear about cricket somewhere and you can try a club. Both are free. So we don't charge. We lend all the equipment. We give the coaches for free. So you don't pay anything to play cricket here in Brazil. Once you get either in the school or the club, you start playing softball cricket, which is very focused on recreational, fun, playing, no equipment, just like getting to know the game, learning technique slowly, but mostly having fun with cricket. And then if you want to, if you think you want to carry on, you would go to start transitioning to hardball cricket. And then it gets a little bit more technical, learning more about the laws, playing games, T10 games, start moving up the ladder as a batter, a bowler, learning more about fielding. And then you start playing the community projects, which are groups of these clubs playing versus each other, softball and hardball. And then you join the T10 league, and then you join the T20 league. So a girl can come to the club, softball tournaments, hardball cricket, hardball T10s, hardball T20s, and then they can go into more development squad, high performance squad, if it's their ability, if they want to. But they can also be playing hardball T10 life for the left the rest of their lives if they want to. They can stay over there as well.
Wow, again, that is quite remarkable because a lot of schools in India don't have this school structure for girls and women's cricket. But seeing this happen in Brazil is actually quite fascinating. And now to just take our conversation more about like your career. So you've obviously played for such a long period of time. So are there any memorable experiences or matches that stand out for you in your career, like as a player and as a captain? You must have so many fun stories and so many things that have happened, right?
Yes, absolutely. A few games really stick in your mind, and sometimes they're not even the more important games, but they change you as a person. I think the first one was when I was playing the final of the 2016 World Cup. Sorry, 2016 South American Championship, and I was not a very strong batter at the time, but I was a very fierce competitor. I knew everything. I knew everyone's stats. I knew how I was like. Extremely much more competitive than what I think I am now. And I remember in the 18th over, I hit my first six. It was a straight six on top of the bowler's head. And I remember the bowler. I remember the ball coming. I remember the ball flying. I remember the celebration. I remember every single moment of that shot. And we ended up winning that game. And I have pictures of me crying on the pitch before the game finished because I hit my first six. I was like, oh my God, this is the moment of my life. And another game that for me, there are two games that for me are extremely important. Both are from the same tournament on the latest fair break. And the first one was the catch that I got on fair break. I was 12th player. I knew I was a huge chance of me being 12th player because I had seven World Cup batters in front of me. So I knew there was a chance I was going to be 12, but Deandra Dotting got hurt and I had to come into the pitch to replace her for a little bit. And I ended up having the catch of my life over there as a sub. I think God put that ball in my hands. And it was such a good moment because I knew that Cricket Brazil was being represented in that moment. The passion that we have, how fierce we are, how much we want to be part of the game, how happy we are of playing the game. So I knew that catch was not only, okay, Roberta got a catch, was like Cricket Brazil is here showing that we can do it. So for me, that was unbelievable. And that same tournament, we had a moment where one of our bowlers, Laura Cardoso, took Danny Wyatt out with a catch of Laura Wolvert. The year before in that fair break, Laura Cardoso cried when she met Danny Wyatt. She couldn't speak. She went into a completely starstruck moment and she couldn't even say a word to Danny Wyatt. And the following year, she was over there getting her wicket when Danny was 50 plus runs. And I remember that I went absolutely ballistic. I went running and hugged her, and we cried together in the middle of the ground, and the whole world saw it. But that also for me is like, you know what? We are inspiring these girls, and they are becoming these amazing, great women and great athletes. And that's what this is all about. So these three moments for me are really, really memorable and really special for different reasons. But I think that's what makes it all be worth.
That is actually quite beautiful, and you know, I could really see myself be in those moments the way you explained it. So thank you for that, and to also you know focus on this aspect. So now you are such an active member and quite representative of the Brazil cricket team. So what are some of the strengths that you see that the team possesses, you know, and areas of improvement, and possibly even a way ahead?
I think we are Brazilians are very sporty and very athletic. So we have it's easy for Brazilians who love sports. And because we don't have many opportunities as women athletes, cricket comes as a very, very good opportunity for women, for girls to play cricket. So I think like we have that advantage towards us. We also have sun all year round. So we don't have an on and off season. We can play cricket anytime. So all of these things happen as a lot. As a team, I think it's so good that we are together all the time. We have one training center, everybody plays, trains together. So we know people's weaknesses, we know people's strengths, we know how to help each other, how to, when people need their space, when people need some support. I think it's much clearer when we are all together. But as a weakness, we don't have the cricket culture installed on us from the beginning. When I talk, for example, about Laura Cardoso, she is an amazing bowler, amazing batter, amazing fielder. She doesn't know, she didn't used to know any of the other players, any of the foreigner players or cricket 4 years ago. She would play softball cricket in her school, but that was all cricket that she knew. Now she watches games and sees strategies and stuff, but 4 years of cricket is very little to a girl that was born in India. And watches cricket, and everybody around her talks cricket all the time. So I think the cricket culture that we're still growing is still very, very new and raw. And that is something that we're gonna have to overcome to become a big competitive community. Because there's so much that you can learn by watching cricket and so much that you can learn by talking cricket, but it's very difficult to watch and it's very difficult to talk cricket here because the culture around us does not exist. But I think with time, those things are definitely gonna get better.
Enough, and that kind of also brings me to this question of how does a typical you know calendar year look for you? Do you already have like scheduled matches and series, or is it like on a need basis, like you know they call you up and then there's training and then you feature for the team?
No, we have a calendar set up. So mid-January we start our calendar training sessions. We train every day, Monday to Friday. We play most Saturdays. And usually we have two big tournaments per year. If it is a World Cup qualifiers year like this one, we would play August, September, the World Cup qualifiers, which is the big tournament. If we do not have the World Cup qualifiers, we play the South American Championships in the second semester. So in the second semester, if it is a World Cup qualifiers year, we would play that tournament, which is a big tournament for us every 2 years. If we don't play the World Cup qualifiers, we would play the South American Championship. And in the first semester, we always try to compete against new teams. For example, last year we played in Africa in the Kiwibuka tournament, which was completely out of our comfort zone. It was countries above us in the rankings, different pitch, different ground, different conditions. But it was so good because, again, we saw the next level that can be achieved. We're not talking about playing versus Thailand, that is very far away. We are talking about what is the next level right now. So we want to beat Kenya, we want to beat Uganda, we want to beat Rwanda next year. We don't want to wait for that in 5 years' time. So I think that shows us that this next level straight away. So we try to plan one competition the first semester, one competition the second semester, training pretty much all year round. And that is focused with a strength and conditioning training. And some girls are called to play in other places. Some went to Fairbreak, a few went to UK. And we hope that those opportunities are going to be happening more and more every day.
That again, kind of brings me to my next question of how was your experience, playing in the Fair Break Global, and any standout experiences there? And just, it's so surreal, right, to play in a tournament of this stature, rubbing shoulders with some of the big wigs in the game.
Oh, I had very big issues in Fairbreak. It took me three breakfasts to say hi to Sophie Devine. I was so starstruck. I could not. I would get up and say, I'm gonna say hi to Sophie Devine, and I would freeze because I can't. She's so good. And what was the coolest part was that every woman that was over there was very approachable. Doesn't matter if they were Marie-Zanne Capps, Sophie Devine, Heather Knight, Laura Wolvart, all of them were open to share experience, to talk, to learn, to teach us. Even today, if I send a message to one of the women from the team, they're pretty much going to reply within their time frame with tips. And I think that makes a whole big difference and creates this network. I can talk to Lauren Winfield Hill about something, and she's going to give me something to talk about. This is so good because we saw where we are as associate nations, but most of all, we actually have help from the full member players, and we play versus them. I had a partnership with Laura Wolvart. Come on, I saw Laura Wolvart's cover drive from 20 meters away from me. I was like, oh my God, this is even more beautiful here. So yeah, it's an experience that is unbelievable. And yes, I think everyone that was part of that would say the same.
Yeah, so just carry forward our discussion. How do you see the current state of women's cricket on a global scale? And any changes or trends that you have observed that has really, piqued your attention and made you feel fascinated about it?
I think it's so good what is happening right now that we actually have more broadcast, more talk about women's cricket, stadiums being full, the WPL. I was there in the WPL. It was so good, the attention that everybody was having, making cricket athletes stars. So this for me is something that is well deserved from all these invisible giants that were playing the game in the past and built this recognition now. So I love that this is happening right now. I hope it carry on. I don't think it's going to be reduced. And what I would love to see happening more is not only in the top scale, but the other countries also getting the same opportunity of playing. Because we know that people are better if they see people doing better. So you cannot be what you cannot see. So if you are able to see more, you're going to be able to be better. But also if you are able to compete on higher levels, to have better coaches, to have better female coaches, coaches that understand that women's cricket is not a copy and paste from men's cricket. It's different. The way you coach is different. The way you talk is different. The way you get the best out of the athlete is different. So I would love to see this new cricket going into more countries. So people that there's a reason why Charlotte Edwards is very successful, and she understands women's cricket. She understands how to get the best out of her athletes. So I'd love to see more Charlotte Edwards coming through the pathway and going to more countries and they being able to play more competitive cricket. I read somewhere that the Nepalese team had not played cricket in I don't know how many weeks. It was something like crazy. They haven't played in like 2 years. It's impossible to expect that team to be better if they're not giving opportunity of play. So I hope this is the next thing going forward. Not only the full member teams getting more games and the broadcast and money that they fully deserve, that is really important, but also the other teams getting the same opportunity.
Enough. And where do you see, the ICC stepping in here to actually, promote and develop associate women's cricket, because we see how the Future Tours program, the FTP, is there for all your higher ranked teams. So how do you see this play out for the associate teams and other nations that really need more exposure?
Yeah, I think there has to be a very big push on into women's participation, women's leagues, because some countries do not have the structure to compete already internationally. The funding to compete is not there internationally, but they have to be able to play their pathways better. that's going to be from a very change of concentration from ICC, but also changing the way they do their funding a little bit. And also like the push has to be bigger into women's cricket. The incentivize has to be bigger in women's cricket. There's going to have to be money, more money being put into women's cricket for the countries that are not able to, they have the potential, they're doing everything right, but they're blocked by funding. And also incentivize more. For example, we want to play more competitive cricket. We can play versus Argentina here, which is close. But apart from Argentina, we have to travel to Africa. That is very expensive. So more countries in South America have to have a greater development. Oh, no, my cat wants to talk to you. Sorry. The same thing, for example, in Southeast Asia, in East Asia Pacific, more countries have to be developed over there. So when they need to compete, they don't have to invest so much. So it has to be from the bottom up, more investment to everyone and making sure that these countries are investing in women's cricket the same as men's.
That's actually such a great point. And to draw parallels, now when you look at football, right, the World Cup usually has obviously more than 10 teams that's competing. But when you look at cricket World Cups, you often have 8 teams, 10 teams that's competing. Do you somewhere feel the need that ICC should actually expand the World Cup and make it more inclusive, have like, you know, 25 to 30 teams that are competing? So it becomes a more competitive World Cup while also giving exposure and opportunity to your associate nations. Like, what are your thoughts on this?
I think we could grow a little bit more the World Cup in terms of giving a few more teams playing. I think maybe we are not ready to expand it too much. For example, if we have India playing versus USA right now, I think it's not going to be competitive, and the investment on that, on a team that is not competitive yet, playing against a team that is very good, that investment maybe could be used into actually improving USA, so in 5 years' time they can compete against India straight away. So I think it has to be a balance of investing into grassroots inclusion, participation, high performance, and investing on the competition. I think we should start growing the World Cup in terms of teams shortly. I think maybe 12, maybe 14, something similar to that, because those teams are in a very good level, but making sure that everyone else afterwards is getting the incentive on high performance participation so they can grow and become stronger, so they can compete against higher levels. We cannot be playing competitive cricket only every 2 years. These teams, every team should be having competitive cricket every year or more often. And that has to be something into people's strategies. And I think it kind of have a big incentive from ICC on the top, so that actually can happen.
So what I understand from what you say is that somewhere, you know, not immediately, maybe the expansion can include like 12 to 14 teams, but maybe like in a 5 to 6 year span, once, you know, the associate nations have gotten more exposure through their grassroots levels program, we can perhaps include them in the World Cup, right?
I think 5 to 6 years is not enough for grassroots to high performance, but that has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So if you don't start now investing in grassroots participation, local competition, national competition, international competition, in 10 years time, you're not going to be anywhere. So if you don't start now making sure that you have that pathway going, your country is not going to improve. You have to be doing it now. So if you, very few countries have the amount of expats, foreigners enough to create a team out of the blue. Most of them have to develop from their own national players born over there that do not know cricket. So you need a little bit bigger time frame, but you have to make sure that you're investing in women's cricket in a sustainable way. And the sustainable way is grassroots participation, local competition, international competition, and high performance. There's no way to cut that. There's no secret formula or anything like that, unless you want to go over there and buy a team of players and wait for 4 years and make them play for you. But every other way is that's what you've got to do. But I think that we have to have a big push to make sure that everyone is working the same thing.
On the- the same line of thought, how important is it to, you know, have the strong domestic structure that's playing a lot of white ball cricket and sometimes can even, you know, have red ball cricket for more endurance? And where do you see, you know, the growth of these leagues would actually help the players, you know, build their fitness and get match ready somewhere?
Yeah, that is a very important part of it, because you cannot, I'm a big believer that you train to learn. So when you're over there playing softball cricket or learning new techniques, learning how to bowl, how to bat, you train to learn. And then you start training to compete. And train to compete is playing on your national league, your strong local league, playing competitions. You start playing to compete, training to compete. And then the third level, which is high performance, when you start training to win. When you actually focus, like, okay, I'm going to win. I'm going to learn how to win, because win does not happen by luck. Win happens because you learn how to do it. So the national competitions, the strong local competitions from every age group, so under 15s, under 17s, under 19s, they're extremely important. So you learn how to compete. You cannot think about high performance without thinking about these three steps. Train to learn, train to compete, and train to win. And also international competitions only are too expensive and too short to make you learn all these things.
Yeah.
So you have to have a strong local national league, playing 6 teams, 8 teams, 10 teams, 12 teams. So that is part of the system already. When you're exposed to international cricket, that's already natural for you.
You know, in this ecosystem of so many matches happening, you see so many leagues that you know, springing up. How do you weigh in the role of media here? Because for most of us in India, you know, we are able to, you know, follow the scores of like associate nations mostly through like apps or like, you know, through websites or so. So how do you think, you know, telecasting of these matches can also help, you know, get the spectators and you know, other stakeholders more interested in associate nation cricket?
Yeah, I think it's super important, because you cannot be what you cannot see. So if a girl is starting playing, she's 12, she's playing in her club or in her school or anything like that, and she doesn't know where to go, she doesn't know how she wants to play, she doesn't know who is her whole role model, who she wants to be, there's a big chance she's going to fall off interest. So if you have those games on YouTube, on Facebook, live or whatever it is, she's going to start saying, you know what, oh, these under 15 girls, oh, they're good, oh, they played that shot, oh, they bowled this ball, oh, I can do that. So she's going to aim for that, to play like those girls. Because if this under 12 girl wants to be like Sprin Mandana, oh, she's going to say, oh my god, maybe that's going to be an incredible role model for her. But maybe she's going to think, you know what, that is too far away, I can't be Mandana. Maybe she can, but that first thought, like, can I be Mandana? But she can be that under 15 girl, that under 17 girl, that under 19 girl. And then she say, you know what? I can play, I can bat like Mandana. You know what? She's an extremely great role model. I'm going to do it like her. But if the gap is too big, sometimes it becomes unachievable. You have to create these little gaps. So they create real role models all through the pathway, so these little girls can grow into the sport. And I think having the game accessible for everyone is a big part of it. If they can see it, they can be it. So when I went to the first America's qualifier, it was in Mexico. And it was the first time my family watched me play cricket. First time. I had been playing cricket for 8 years at the time. And they saw on TV, they saw the games. And the last game was unbelievable. We took 5 wickets in 5 balls to win the match. It was crazy. And when I came back on the Sunday lunch, because we are very big in Sunday lunches in Brazil, my nephew was talking about catches. Oh, you had a catch, auntie. And my mom was like, yeah, because this girl bowled that girl and they did this and they needed 2 runs. They took 5 wickets. I was like, who are you? What have you guys done to my family? What is happening? My family had never spoken about cricket before. Never. They watched one tournament from Brazil and they were talking cricket on Sunday lunch. And they were talking things that they saw on TV and they were talking players' names. So that is such a big difference. So you have to make sure that, if possible, make them watch cricket and make them see cricket and make them see what is relatable. If they see something that is relatable, there's a big chance they're actually going to stay.
Again, that is so beautifully narrated. And here's hoping we get to see a lot of you play in different franchisee T20 leagues, right? We have the women's BBL, we have the WBBL, we have the Women's Premier League, you have the 100 as well, right? So do you aspire to even feature in some of these tournaments? Because obviously, the exposure is massive and rubbing shoulders with great players, right? So how does that play out for you?
Oh, that would be a dream to play any of these tournaments. I do believe that we are going to have Brazilians playing that tournament in a few years' time. I have my hopes that some of these players are going to get there. I think this is gonna it's not going to be for me, but in maybe 4 or 5 years' time, we're going to have Brazilians. And I can't wait. I seriously can't wait because it's going to be a massive change for us. And why not, isn't it? It's going to prove that the sport can grow anywhere that you give an opportunity.
Exactly. And even when you assess, right, the level of competitiveness and even the growth of women's cricket in Brazil, so somewhere do you see even the quality has gradually increased, and you see a lot more tournaments and matches coming up in the coming few months or perhaps even years?
Yes, we are playing much more now. For example, the women's national team plays the men's local competitions. The under 13s, under 15s, 17s, 19s, boys and girls play competitions now. We have a ground that is only for cricket that is used pretty much every day of the week. So we see more national men's teams. So we see more people playing structured cricket, not only the social cricket that they go in the weekend and play, but more competitions for all. And that's always been part of the plan to make sure that more people are in the system. And I think it's finally happening. What we want for next year is our Women's National League to become something really big. Because currently we play and it is good, but we want to make sure that every girl that comes into the Women's National League is part of something very special. So it's something that we are working. We started a little trial this year, but next year we hope. And we want it to be big on social media, on education, on the games, on everything. So because we want to make sure that girls are valued in the competition and that they love it in the end of the week.
Right, and when do we see you in action next, for Brazil or any other international league?
Well, for me, it's funny because I have been talking so much about the end of my career, and the more I talk about the end of my career, less I get out of my career. So I thought about I spoke about actually retiring next year. And since I came back from the tournament, a lot has happened, and maybe that's not gonna happen. Maybe I'm gonna stick for another couple of years. I don't know. I'm waiting for life to give me answers. But there's a big chance because we are going through a restructured in Cricket Brazil. There's a big chance that I'm going to stick for another couple of years. But so with that in mind, I would love to keep playing Fairbreak. Would love to keep playing in Africa. If there are any other opportunities around, that's also something that I'm looking forward to. We played the ICC qualifiers now, and I think the team did not have the greatest performance, but I saw a lot of improvement from everyone, and I saw a lot of improvement with my game as well. So I think like I love the fact that I'm 38 and we're still improving. So I don't want to miss that for so shortly. So yeah, I hope life takes me to good places.
Yes, and hopefully in India too. I'd love to see you play for RCB in Women's Premier League. Yeah.
I want to be in India next year for the WPL. I don't think I'm going to be picked, but I would love to be there because I love India. I love the food. I love the people. And I can't believe I've never been here
Oh
before.
no.
I want to go every year now. You guys made me nuts. And yeah, I really want to be in India next year in the WPL because it was an experience that I don't think I'll ever forget.
Manifesting, and hopefully, we can see
Manifesting.
you. Right.
Manifesting big time.
Yeah, and you know, through the episode, we've spoken so much about cricket. So what are other things, you know, you're passionate about, like besides cricket, like traveling, and how do you basically just unwind and relax from the game?
That is something that I have actually big trouble because for me,
Oh.
cricket is relaxing, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, but last year I decided that I have to find out things to do that relax me. I'm really passionate about dogs. As you can see, they are part here of the meeting. The dogs, the cats, I love them to beat. I'm married, so I have like a life outside cricket as well. Although his nickname is the bowling machine, so he kind of is very involved in cricket as well. But I'm in the moment of my life that I'm trying to figure out stuff that I can do that are not cricket related to relax. Have been doing a little bit of yoga, which is good. I haven't done much traveling, but I have done like a lot of gastronomic days. So I go to different coffee places and try different food. We go out and just like completely turned off, no phone, no cricket, no anything, just to zone out a little bit because I can be very intense. So yeah, trying to figure out what can I do that is not cricket because I love cricket so much that I could talk about it throughout 25 hours of the day.
Exactly. And do you have a coaching side to you as well? Like at some point, would you want to, you know, actually help the next generation of cricketers get into the game, considering you have played for so many years?
Oh yeah, of course. Once I retire, whenever that may be, I'm gonna be involved. I'm not sure if into only coaching, or maybe like mentor in the working administration. I want to go to UK next year and actually shadow captains, shadow coaches, and see what they are doing. How is this coach dealing with their players? How is this captain dealing with their players? I want to learn. So I want to make sure that I am a good role model and a good mentor for the new generation. And I'm 100% going to be involved with cricket for the rest of my life. But I want to be really make the setup good for girls and that they can believe in themselves and they can believe that they can be bigger and better than what they are right now, not only in cricket, but as a person as well. For me, it's not about the win. Today, I say that I'm in cricket not because I want to win everything. I want to win everything, of course. But if people are getting better as a person in their values and in their lives, for me, that's what matters. The wins are gonna come in as a consequence of that. So I think cricket changed my life a lot in it, and I want to make sure that I can keep sharing that with the new generation.
Again, that is just brilliant. And you know, I wish you could put all of this wisdom in a book. But are you planning to write an autobiography or something, you know, pen your life story? I'd love to read it.
Oh, do you think I'm gonna find someone? I have to find someone to be like, okay, can you sit over there and listen for? Because there's a lot to share.
It is, yeah.
I would love to write about what cricket impacted my life, because I thought about this before already. Because it's something that is, well, how I came into cricket and how I am right now is completely different. I told you I was very competitive in
Yeah.
2016. I was 100% an individual player, and now if my team does not need me, I may sit myself on the bench. It's like these kind of scenarios. But I think it changes you. Sports, well applied sports, change you. And cricket has values. Cricket has a meaning that is different than the majority of the sports that we know. The spirit of cricket is something that can be very strong. And I don't mean like do not man can. It's not that. That for me is not the spirit of cricket. The spirit of cricket is something else. For me, something deeper. So I think that really can change you. And I thought about actually doing a short video. I spoke
Oh.
to a person a couple of months ago about like, what about if we actually register this? Let's think
Yes.
about registering this, thinking about this may be the end of my career. How can I make sure that this is not lost? So yeah, maybe there's something's gonna come out of it. Never know.
Excited for that, and again manifesting for that book or podcast series
Manifesting.
or video series to come out. And as we reach the end of our discussion as well, do you have any final thoughts or like words of wisdom or even a message for our listeners?
Well, first of all, a huge thank you, isn't it? It has been so good to talk to you. I'm super glad that this worked out. And I don't know, I think I always sign my autograph. And I sign my autograph, Roberta, number five, and I do a little smile. And I think, like in life, in cricket, anywhere, you don't have to smile all the time, but you have to do things that make you happy. You're not going to be happy all the time, but overall, things that can bring a smile to your face. So for me, like if I can tell anyone anything, it's like, do not ever forget to smile, that life is good, life can be relaxing. Look for the happiness around you, you're going to be able to find it. So if that can say anything to anyone, it would be that. Look for the smile, and yeah, hopefully you're going to be able to find it quite close to you.
I will definitely. I think every time I'm sad, I'm just gonna listen to this last part of the episode because it's just yeah, and remember to always smile. And on that note, I'd like to draw curtains on our discussion. Thank you so much, Roberta, for joining me on this lovely discussion and taking time off your busy schedule and sharing your thoughts. I'm sure our listeners are going to love this episode. They will ask for a part two and I'll approach you again. And this was a great collaboration, it goes without saying. And I'd love to have you on the podcast again. So until next time, stay safe and take care.
Thank you so much. Have a great week.
Bye. I'd like to thank you all for ardently supporting my podcast. It really gives me the strength and zeal to keep working and delivering quality content to you all. A heartfelt thank you. Do check out @NeverInTheBackFoot on Instagram and Threads and @NeverInTheBackOne on Twitter, now called X, for a lot of facts, trivia, terminology, and a lot more that's coming up. The podcast is also available on several other platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify for Podcasters, Overcast, and a lot of other platforms. So please do spread the word. Do feel free to share your thoughts and suggestions for the already published episodes and recommendations for future topics. Do share this episode widely, and your support is really appreciated. See you next time, listeners. Cheers, stay safe, and take care. Bye for now.